and are hopeful that the $170,000 price tag they need can be reached to give the D-Expedition a second chance. The team said it needs only half that budget and is hoping to raise $85,000 in U.S. dollars using the GoFundMe website. The D-Expedition isn't just about getting a coveted DX in the log, however. The team writes that members have been in contact with the Norwegian Polar Institute, the organization that monitors and protects the island, and intends to collect scientific information as well to pass on to the Institute. So this is a mission for radio as well as research, especially in the area of global warming. The GoFundMe contributions have already started coming in, and hams are showing their generosity. But, as with the seagoing trip itself, there is still some distance to go. If you can help, please go to tinyurl.com/BouvetGFME. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Ralph Squillaci, KK6 ITB.
Another D-Expedition, the one on Pitcairn Island, has wound down, but not before leaving lessons with one group of youngsters in California. Jack Parker, W8ISH, has that story.
The Pitcairn Island D-Expeditioners are stirring the waters and the airwaves of the South Pacific, including during the CQ Worldwide SSB contest. The most eager pileup, calling VP6R, was perhaps assembled in Fontana, California, where third graders at the Dorothy Grant Elementary School, K6DGE, successfully got through in the days before the contest even got underway. The team reported that they had fun chatting with the youngsters and answering their questions. Teacher Beverly Matheson, WA6BK, had prepared the students with some history and geography lessons about the island and gave them the basics of radio communication protocol. The school has had the club since 2012, and its logbook is no stranger to going the distance. Over the years, students have made contact with Hungary, Argentina, and even the Falkland Islands. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jack Parker, W8ISH.
Delegates have gathered for the World Radio Communications Conference in Egypt. Ed Durant, DD5LP, gives us a look at the opening days.
The World Radio Communication Conference has opened in Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt. 3,000 delegates are meeting there over the course of 4 weeks with proposed changes to the ITU radio regulations on their agenda. The WRC conference comprises issues beyond the realm of amateur communications, but the delegates are pressing forward on concerns impacting the 5 GHz amateur spectrum, a proposed new spectrum of international mobile telecommunications that could impact the amateur spectrum around 47 GHz, the control of interference from wireless power transmission systems, and items on the agenda of the 2023 conference that could impact the amateur services. This includes proposed changes to the band between 1240 and 1300 MHz. Those attending include the IARU and its member societies, giving input on behalf of amateur and amateur satellite services. Amateurs in the delegation, including Flavio Arcangelo, PY2ZX, have issued an urgent call to tackle the increasing problem of radio noise. The IARU intends to provide updates throughout the conference, which concludes on November 22nd. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Ed Durant, DD5LP.
AMSAT North America is planning some changes that it hopes will simplify members' use of its resources. Neil Rapp, WB9VPG, has the details.
Get ready for some changes to the website of AMSAT North America. Robert Bankston, KE4AL, AMSAT's treasurer and vice president of user services, has announced that navigation will become more intuitive on the site, which will also offer guides on how to get started using amateur radio satellites and clear information about how to work the satellites. Robert made the announcement at the end of the recent AMSAT Symposium and Annual General Meeting. He said other changes will include a new membership management system that lets AMSAT NA members update contact information, pay dues, and register for events more efficiently. The changes will also lead to production of a digital copy of the AMSAT Journal. He said the digitally published journal will mean members get delivery of a full-color magazine without any additional costs. The changes come as AMSAT marks its 50th anniversary year. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Neil Rapp, WB9 VPG.
In the United States, hams have learned they will be saying goodbye soon to a lawmaker who has been a longtime advocate and supporter on Washington, D.C.'s Capitol Hill. Greg Walden, W7EQI, announced his retirement from the U.S. Congress, where he has served his home state of Oregon for more than two decades. He is the top member of the Republican Party, serving on the Energy and Commerce Committee of the House of Representatives. He announced he will not seek re-election in 2020. It's never too early to start planning a national convention, and hams in South Africa are already pretty busy, as we hear from Jim Meachin, ZL2BHF.
The South African Radio League is marking its 95th year in 2020, and plans are already well underway for the national convention being held from the 3rd to the 5th of April in Johannesburg. Members are encouraged to submit motions they would like to see discussed at the annual general meeting and to submit their nominations for award and trophy recipients. There are also five vacancies on the council that need to be filled. The weekend will begin with a symposium on Friday the 3rd, followed by the general meeting the next day. SARL will also be marking its big anniversary by applying for a special call sign. Anyone interested in submitting nominations or motions should contact the SARL secretary no later than the 31st of January 2020. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jim Meachin, ZL2BHF.
Time for you to identify your station. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including D-Star Reflector 91C on Wednesdays at 7:30 p.m. local time in Melbourne, Australia, where Clayton VK7ZCR is the reflector coordinator. Congratulations to one of the newest clubs to join the amateur radio universe. Hams in Colorado's San Luis Valley held their first meeting as a club on the 19th of October in Monte Vista, where the 15 attendees helped with the formal organization of the new entity. Attendees included the Reverend Bob Galley, KE0JDN, pastor of the Calvary Baptist Church, which hosted the meeting. Galley told the local newspaper that the club is giving high priority to helping with emergency communications within the valley and to help with the instruction of newcomers to the hobby. The organizers established an education group, a group dedicated to drawing up a constitution and bylaws, a repeater group, and a mobilization group. We here at Newsline wish them luck and years of growth. Responding to concern about the failure to gain enough new amateurs in the UK, one manager at the Radio Society of Great Britain is shopping around what he hopes is a solution. Jeremy Boot, G4NJH, has more.
The VHF manager of the Radio Society in Great Britain has further publicized a proposal he believes will turn around the UK's serious slump in attracting entry-level radio amateurs. John Renio, G4SWX, who was interviewed by Pete, M0PSX of Essex Ham, is heard in a video urging the creation of a beginner's level license to bring more newcomers to VHF and UHF at a time when he believes both bands are seriously underused. John's proposal, which is not the first such suggestion, has its origin in a discussion thread on the RSGB workshop group online. The proposal has sparked some debate, causing the RSGB to close the thread. John has said his intention is to remove barriers that he calls an obstacle for entry-level amateurs. He said many of these barriers centre on technical knowledge. He says in the interview, "I recognise there are people who just want to come on the radio and communicate, and then there has to be a space, there has to be room for them as well." The RSGB also states that in 2018... only 1,366 hams received the foundation license, which is a 28% drop from 2005, where there were 1,892 new licensees at that level. The RSGB notes that because of natural turnover among hams, especially with a high rate of silent keys, the losses are clearly outweighing any gains. To view the video and get a better understanding of the controversy, visit Essex Ham on Twitter or at their website, essexham.co.uk. For Amateur Radio News Line, I'm Jeremy Boot, G4NJH.
So you think the big deal at homecoming is football? Well, the International Space Station has that sport beat by not just a mile, but more than 200 miles. Kevin Trotman, N5PRE, explains.
October is a time for college campus homecomings, so leave it to amateur radio operators to organize a very different kind of homecoming. At the U.S. Military Academy at West Point, New York, the hosting committee is comprised of cadets in the Academy's ham radio club, W2KGY. On the other end of the contact was NA1SS, Colonel Drew Morgan, a 1998 West Point graduate, who was some 250 miles above Earth and his alma mater aboard the International Space Station. Their 10-minute contact on October 19th had been planned since this past summer, even before Drew left the launch pad, heading towards the ISS. It marked the second time the Academy's club has had a QSO with the ISS. Colonel Stephen Hamilton, the officer in charge of the Academy's club, said that the first such contact was in 2007, according to the Army website. While the precious window for radio communications remained open, the cadets inside the shack at Bartlett Hall got busy asking questions about the space program and the ISS. One instructor sought any advice the astronaut might have for any candidate who might aspire to follow him into space one day. The communications window closed soon after, but you can hear and see the QSO by visiting the West Point U.S. Military Academy page on Facebook. Meanwhile, Drew had another homecoming at yet another alma mater just days later, talking to medical students at the Uniformed Services University of the Health Sciences in Bethesda, Maryland, from which he graduated in 2002. His QSO with that school was live-streamed worldwide. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Kevin Trotman, N5PRE.
In the world of DX, satellite DX Chaser and DX Expeditioner Philippe, EA4NF, is getting ready for his next big adventure, which will be his operation from Melilla, a very small Spanish territory in northern Africa. It's also a rare grid and one of the most wanted on the satellite DXCC list. Philippe will be on the air from the 18th to the 21st of November as EA9/EA4NF. He states on his Twitter account that he will be posting updates as well as passes there for anyone who is looking to contact him. His handle is EA4NF_SAT. Maza JA0RQV will be using the call sign A35JP from Tongapatu Island starting November 24th and running through November of next year when he returns to Japan. Listen for him on 160 through 6 meters using CW, SSB, and FT8. QSL on LOTW and Club Log by the Bureau or direct with $2 in U.S. currency to his home call sign, JA0RQV. An amateur radio team using the call sign C6AGU will be active from Wood Cay Island in the Bahamas from the 15th of November to the 9th of December. Listen for them on 160 and 80 meters using CW and FT8. They will also participate in the CQ Worldwide DXCW and ARRL 160 meter contests. Our final story is about the Radio Astronomy Research Facility here in West Virginia and its relationship with Wi-Fi. Or should we perhaps call it Why Not Fi? West Virginia's Green Bank Observatory, the first national astronomy observatory in the U.S., has scored groundbreaking discoveries from black holes and pulsars to neutron stars. It has even searched for extraterrestrial life. Its centerpiece is the 485-foot-tall Green Bank Telescope, which has an operating range from 100 megahertz to 116 gigahertz. For fans of radio, Wi-Fi, and some electronics, however, one less welcome discovery in Green Bank is the facility's long-standing need to live without RFI affecting its delicate operations. The FCC established a National Radio Quiet Zone 61 years ago to limit RFI. The state itself has protective restrictions. These bans predate Wi-Fi, however, not to mention smartphones and even smart home appliances. Fear not, says an October article in Popular Mechanics. With a nod to the march of tech progress, the observatory is looking at a variety of possible solutions for the locals, including something called Li-Fi, a form of wireless communication in the terahertz range that uses infrared and invisible light. The locals are hopeful. They're just not texting one another about it. At least, not yet. With thanks to Alamosa News, Amateur News Weekly, AMSAT North America, the ARRL, Bouvet Island 3Y0I De-Expedition, CQ Magazine, the Defense Visual Information Distribution Service, Essex Ham, Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, Popular Mechanics, Radio Society of Great Britain, South African Radio League, Southgate Amateur Radio News, Ted Randall's QSO Radio Show, WTWW Shortwave, the YL Beam, and you, our listeners, that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Please send emails to our address at newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website at arnewsline.org. For now, with Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT, at the news desk in New York, and our news team worldwide, I'm Jim Dameron, NATMW in Charleston, West Virginia, saying 73. And as always, we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2019, all rights reserved.
This is ARRL Audio News, your weekly summary of news highlights from the world of amateur radio. If you retransmit audio news through a repeater, listen for the Morse code K character, followed by 4 seconds of silence. That's your cue to stop transmitting so that your repeater timer can reset.
I'm Carla Pereira, KC1HSX, and these are our stories for Friday, November 1st. The Coconino Amateur Radio Club provided safety and coordination communications for the 100-mile stagecoach line run over the September 21st through 22nd weekend. This endurance run from Flagstaff to the Grand Canyon takes place every September. The 31-hour event pushes runners to the limit, and it also tests amateur radio's capabilities and requires planning and commitment. Because of the geographical coverage required, the club's amateur radio support even took advantage of 160 meters, not a band typically associated with public service communication. The club's communication infrastructure required a combination of HF and VHF-UHF equipment that included setting up portable repeaters and stations powered by generators and other power sources. Club members invested more than 300 hours of their time in planning and supporting the race, helped by a few additional volunteers from Glendale and Prescott. 19 club members staffed 8 sites, where volunteers set up camps and kept vigil through the night to track and make sure runners were accounted for throughout the race. In addition to tracking runners into and out of each aid station, NetControl entered their times into an online spreadsheet as they progressed through the race.